Hey, Scanner Group. I'm Ryan Mallory.
And I'm Jared Banry.
Today, we're going to talk to Officer Rob Havis, and he's got 30 years in law enforcement, and since 1998 as a canine handler, and also he is a trainer on boards in California and Oregon for training canine police dogs.
We're privileged to be here with Officer Havis, a very seasoned canine officer. I've been blessed to know him since I've been a kid when I was working with Central Point. He's came out onto several of my traffic stops, and I've got to see him in action. And we are very excited to have him here tonight to discuss his career as a canine officer.
Really, we wanted to have you on here because we wanted to learn more about police dogs and, you know, kind of talk to somebody that's been doing it a really long time, training other officers, other dogs, helping with the certifications and things like that as a board member in two states. You have a lot of stuff to talk about relative to dogs. I'm just going to say out front, I kind of, anytime somebody comes on, I go search Scanner Group to see their comments and stuff like that. And if there's a dog one, you're into it.
I am.
I learned that Malinois are not necessarily good family pet. They're more wired for sound. Yeah,
that's correct. Very high drive dogs.
How many dogs have you worked?
I just retired my fifth and just obtained my sixth dog with Medford PD.
Wow. And you were telling us earlier since 1998 and 30 years in law enforcement.
Yes.
And those dogs go home and retire at some point.
They do. So I have a full house right now because I train dogs for other agencies. I have a pet at home that belongs to the family. So right now I'm sitting at five dogs at home. So
that's full awesome. House. We like dogs around our house too. That's cool.
Wow.
So there's a few different, I was looking on Medford Police Department's site and the stuff for the canines, and it said something about there being four different units or four different groups, and I noticed two of them were drug detection and two of them were something different.
Correct. I started my career with a patrol dog. Patrol dogs are the dogs that most folks are, you know, familiar with. You see them on TV. They search for persons and property. They do handler protection. Some people refer to them as the bite dogs.
The bite dogs.
So to speak. We don't, because that's a last resort for us, is having the dog to have to apprehend someone. But to the public, that's kind of how they relate to it. So we have two patrol dogs currently at the city of Medford, and we have three drug detection dogs, and I handle two of them.
Okay. And they're looking for hard narcotics? Is that what they're?
Well, I handle two because I think it was 2016, ballot measure 91 was enacted in the state of Oregon, which was the legalization of marijuana. So there was kind of a mass exodus of what we call four-odor dogs. They do marijuana, meth, heroin, and cocaine. So there was that knee-jerk reaction to get rid of all the dogs that did marijuana. Currently, I think we have a total of nine in the state of Oregon. And I have one of them. The way we use them is we can use them in the jail. We can use them on parole and probation searches. And we mostly use ours for black market marijuana.
Makes sense.
So we have a lot of import-export in the state, and we try to minimize that. We try to minimize it because it protects the businesses we have, like in the city of Medford, all the dispensaries and stuff, our citizens that are paying taxes, doing everything, paying their business license like they're supposed to by the law. And then if you have somebody undercutting them, that affects their business.
Poaching. Yeah, for sure.
Correct.
And then also, I've read a lot about the bootleg marijuana becoming the meth and heroin. It's like a step up to trade up or to sell it and buy something that's more valuable.
Correct. They're bartering with it. If you go on to Craigslist, someone's selling something, they'll even put in their no 420, which means they won't trade for marijuana.
Because they've had that call before when they're trying to sell a TV and somebody wants to give them pot for it.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, so I've had that call on Craigslist.
Yeah, that's right. You were selling a TV, and that's probably why it came to mind.
Yes, and also we've had incidents where they will trade marijuana for hard drugs because there's such a surplus of marijuana here.
Yeah.
That they get to a point where they'll trade it. They want to barter.
Some of this is done in shipping areas and things like that, as well as, you know, just cars and households and those kind of things, the searching? Or
yes, we work all the shipping companies.
Okay.
FedEx, UPS, Postal Service, all of the trucking companies. We work car carriers. We work U-Haul. We work pretty much anything. Anything that can transport illicit drugs, we'll work it.
Makes sense.
So we've seen just about every form of transportation in order to get drugs from point A to point B.
And being on the I-5 corridor, there's probably quite a bit of that here, huh?
There is quite a bit of it. And with all the different ballot measure changes and so on and so forth, we have to adapt to that and change. And that's what we did when we went from a lot of four-odor to three-odor dogs in Oregon. So the majority are three-odor dogs, and that is what my other dog is, which just does meth, heroin, and cocaine.
Now, the four-odor dogs that were working at the time, are they? Did they have to retire all those dogs? Or
at the city of Medford, we had Canine Cody, which Corporal Friend was the handler of Cody. He still has Cody, and we retired him, and he's been living a good life at home with Corporal Friend. And he decided to not stay in canine and promoted up to the corporal rank and is working patrol still. But across the state, they either retired the dog or the younger dogs, they sold them to other states, which we saw a lot of. Okay.
So sometimes they go off to a state where marijuana is still illegal. They need that kind of dog, but not necessarily as many here.
Correct. And we saw it sometimes where jails were interested because
contraband.
And parole and probation. They use them for parole and probation searches.
Now, when you say you have two dogs that you're working.
Yes.
Now, you don't take them both out on patrol with you, right?
They're with me. If my car is moving, they're both usually with me.
Oh, nice.
That's cool.
I have a split cage in the back. It's kind of set up a 60-40 because one's bigger than the other. And they're there at all times. Because when training comes up, it's nice because you don't have to take the time to take a break to rest the other dog. You can just go grab the other dog and continue on with your training.
Oh, that makes sense.
So it's a lot more work. It's double the work, but you can be a lot more efficient.
Now, are both dogs, what are the breed of your dogs?
I just retired a Belgian Malinois. And he and I were together 7 years, and he was my four-odor dog. And then my three-odor dog is an English Springer Spaniel, imported from Ireland. And then my current dog is a Dutch Shepherd, which is similar to a Belgian Malinois in appearance, but they have a brindle coat, but their body structure and hair and such is real similar to a Mal.
They have all that energy that the Malinois have?
They do. They're a little more focused and not as erratic. Sometimes a lot of the Mals, they just get so spun up and so excited that getting them redirected and focused back on task sometimes is a bit of a challenge.
Makes sense.
Now, when you take these dogs out, and I know what, like with a patrol dog, when the patrol dog works, they're working for a prize, right?
Yeah, it's basically that a lot of people think that like a patrol dog, they're trying to satisfy a drive, and it's the hunt drive. So generally it's with a toy, a tug, something along those lines, and that's what we use. You have to find what works. Every dog's different. I always say dog training is a lot like raising children. Each one's different, and there's different ways to get to your goal. There isn't just one way to train a dog to get to a goal, and that's what is a lot of fun as a trainer because you learn from each other new little tricks to get to the same goal but taking a different path because dogs, like kids, respond differently.
A lot of these training programs, and you're on some boards for them as well, they're like yearly? The dog has to be recertified?
Minimum, yeah.
Maybe explain a little bit about what it takes to create a police dog, because I don't think everybody understands. I mean, they may have trained their home pet really well, but they may not understand all of the hours and time and different strategies and effort that it takes to train a police dog.
There is literally thousands of hours that go into these dogs throughout their career. And getting them to a certain level takes just hundreds and hundreds of hours. And then maintaining that level, it's kind of like an athlete when they get to a certain level in their career, you still have to maintain that performance. So we're fortunate with the city of Medford is we're given the standard is 16 hours a month. That's a bare minimum. But the city of Medford gives us 4 training days a month. One of our days in our patrol shift throughout the week is a training day. And we're very fortunate because to have a successful canine program, you have to have a supportive command staff. And we have that. So I think that's why we're one of the premier canine units in the state. So getting them to that point, generally on the drug side, I take dogs from what we call green. They have no training. They're just bred. They have natural hunt drive. And they have the minimum characteristics needed to take a dog to turn them into a police dog. After I go out and I will spend 4, 5, 6 hours with a dog, running it through a set of exercises, making sure that it has the qualities that I need to turn this into a police dog. We only buy dogs from Europe. It's because of breeding. They're very strict. It minimizes things like hip dysplasia, the interbreeding that some breeders will do, and spondylosis, things like that. So we're putting a lot of money into these dogs. We want to make sure we're starting with the absolute best possible product we can. So to get these dogs in from Europe, especially right now during COVID and such, it's even more challenging. They're very expensive. We just looked at the latest price on a dog getting it in. You're running $15,000 to $18,000 to get the dog in. That one would be pre-trained. It would already be imprinted, meaning started. It's not ready to hit the streets yet, and the handler would still have to go to school. But that's kind of the cost you're looking at. Very expensive. So once you figure out you have a dog that is qualified and has the qualifications and the characteristics needed to be a drug detection dog or a patrol dog, then you start putting it through the paces of training it. And at any point during that time, you can see some issues with the dog that still could cause the dog to be eliminated from training and you have to start all over.
Oh, wow.
So it's even in the drug detection side, we're dealing with high liability. In our policy, our canine policy is one of our what we call our red policies. So it's high liability. So what we do, because they're dogs, everyone asks me, hey, does your dog bite? Well, it's a dog. It has teeth, and at any point, it has defense characteristics, and if it gets put in that position, it could bite. Right. Have I seen my dog bite anybody? No.
Any dog.
But any dog has the possibility of biting you, and we have to keep that in mind. You know, we're going into schools. We're giving demos to children, and with my dogs, they generally come in and they can pretty much just about hang on my dogs and everything's fine because they're full of play drive and they love the attention.
That much work, and they probably know the difference between a threat and a child too.
They really do. With my dogs, I use 2 different toys. We have a work toy and we have home toy.
Okay.
So it's one of those things where they know, you know. They also know when they have a certain collar on, it's a work collar. Or if they have their harness on, they know it's hard. When they get in my work rig, they know it's game on. It's kind of like with us. It's you know yeah. that when you jump in the police car, hey, it's time to go to work.
Makes sense.
You have to be real careful too, though, because some days in training, if you're working patrol, I don't work uniform duty. I work in MADGE, so I work plain clothes. So today my dogs were looking at me like, who's this guy? Is he the dog catcher or what? You know, I've never seen this guy before. So I haven't had a uniform on in like 2.5 years or so. But when you're working uniform duties 3 days out of the week, and then all of a sudden you have like your training utilities on and they just see you in like BDUs and maybe a sweatshirt or something because you're going to get it all dirty. They're like, okay. After a while, they know. They go and they start acting different. They're like, okay, it's training day. So we have to keep that in mind. And some days... right out of the hopper, we'll put a uniform on. We'll do a stop with a decoy to throw them off to make sure that they're always staying on their toes and refined because these animals are super smart.
Yeah.
And you're always having to stay in front of them.
Now, when you get called out to a, let's say, a traffic stop and you get your dog out, when the dog indicates to an odor, what does the dog do?
There's two basic types of indication from dogs. There's a passive and aggressive. We used to see more aggressive alert, and aggressive is just the dog will scratch at the car and sometimes bark, and it's an aggressive or an active alert. Different terminology, but the same thing. The other that we see more common now is a passive alert. I've had people on traffic stops where they, you know, we go back to them and say, hey, the dog indicated on your car, and they go, no, man, he didn't. I didn't see him bark or scratch once. Because either in the past he's seen an active alert dog or on TV or something.
Right.
But at this point, we see some characteristic changes in the dog, what we would refer to as kind of a pre-alert. The dog's going to go, a lot of times this odor, when it leaves its source, it'll come out like a shotgun blast. You have the source of the odor, and then it comes out in a cone. Things that can affect it are environment, like in here, the forced air can do it. When you're out on the road, wind buffeting off cars or just the natural air. So you have to keep those things in mind. But as it comes out, the dog, when it's searching in a cone, whether it be a patrol dog or a drug dog, you'll watch it, and it'll start working that cone back and forth, short tracks until it gets to the source, especially if you're out in a field and it's a patrol dog looking for someone that's hiding out there. And the handler's going to recognize that, and he's going to see some physical characteristics change in the dog, whether it be its breathing, its posturing. And again, every dog's a little bit different. Some are a little more pronounced in the way that they change their physiological effects, and others are real subtle. But as a handler, it's your job to learn those. And when you're out on a track or out on a search, you're focused on your dog. The patrol folks will always have one or two people with them that's watching ahead. And then it's the handler's job just to look at the dog and to keep track of the dog and whatever that dog's doing.
That makes sense. Our family likes German Shepherds, and we like to play this game called Hide Mom. We hide my wife, and that might be in the woods, or that might be around our property. She might crawl in the back of a truck and put the tailgate back up, but we keep them inside. Let them out and tell them to find mom, and they'll run like banshees all over our yard until they hit a smell, and then they just work back and forth, back and forth, back and forth until they find her, and they always find her.
Yep.
Oh, very interesting. So once you get the alert, what's usually the next step?
An alert on the detection side. If we're doing a vehicle stop and we get to the point where we're doing an exterior search of the vehicle, and if we do get an alert at that point, then we're going to either do one of two things. You can operate under the vehicle exception rule in Oregon, or you can seize the vehicle and apply for a search warrant at that point. The Supreme Court went back and forth, and finally, or the courts went back and forth, finally the Supreme Court said the error around a vehicle that has escaped from the vehicle, there's no expectation to privacy. So as long as you have a legal right to be there with the car, as long as you're not going into someone's private property, you're okay. If you're on a traffic stop on a public roadway or a premise open to the public, like, say, the mall parking lot, you can search every car in there if you like.
Yeah, the air coming out of the vehicle shouldn't smell like heroin.
It should not.
And the dog knows.
Definitely should not.
Now, on the indication that the dog does the passive or aggressive alerts, would that dictate maybe the size of the or the strength of the smell?
There's some different things that affect it. It's going to depend upon what's going on with the car, what the outside ambient temperature is, if windows are open, what kind of age the vehicle is, because the seals around the doors will kind of break down over time on an older car. They're not going to hold as much in. There's just a lot of factors involved. There's a lot of holes that can be end up drilled in a car when people are putting aftermarket things in that allows air to escape from different places in the car. So all that affects. So you could maybe have a pound in a car and you're thinking, oh man, there's a lot of odor coming from it. And then there's 5 pounds in there and there's more odor on the 1 pound on one car. But it's basically just because of the amount of air that can escape based on the car and what's going on, if windows are up or down or, you know, where it's at in the car. So we get compartments a lot out on the freeway where they've built compartments into the natural voids into cars. Mm-hmm. And those are real challenging to find too, because the dog's indicating, and you got to figure out how to get into that trap without destroying the car or getting close to the gas tank or different things like that. So.
Thanks for tuning in to the Scanner Group Crowdsourced Crime and Safety Podcast with Ryan Mallory and Jared Banery from Thief Hunter Labs. Make sure to subscribe today for notifications about the next show. Visit us at www.thiefhunterlabs.com or on Facebook as Thief Hunter Labs in the search bar.